school friendly.
Welcome back, everybody. This week on Kino Clash, or this episode on Kino...
Ryan, this is a new episode.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a new episode. We can't welcome them back to a new episode.
That's true. I guess
they
could
be new listeners.
We're welcoming the Clashers.
That's
back.
Very not inclusive to our growing audience, Ryan.
Welcome back to our Kino Clashers, and if you're just visiting for the first time, welcome.
Welcome to the Kino Clashers, and welcome to the new ones.
Yeah.
We'll make them feel at home. Yeah. Don't exclude them.
We've given, you know, explicit permission for you to put Kino Clasher on your resume if you so choose. No need to contact us for that. We've gotten several emails already. Don't worry about it. But anyhow, yeah, to everybody, this is episode 14, is that right, of Kino Clash, or is this 13? All right, so welcome to 14 of Kino
Almost
Clash.
Halfway.
So today we're going to be doing, yeah, today we're going to be doing City of God against the Sisters Brothers. I don't remember.
It's a 13v4 seed
right.
matchup, if I'm not
That's,
mistaken.
That is what I was thinking as well. So without further ado, with further ado, I'm Ryan.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Kyle.
Nice.
Thanks.
And I should also add that my first and middle name is Ryan Vincent Arthur. of Kino Clash.
And this is actually good. We should share our full names. My full name is Kyle Thomas Aquinas.
That's pretty sweet.
Unrelated.
And I'm Alex neat. Rocket Lil Z.
Rocket. Oh, very nice.
Alex is trying to get the youth appeal back into Catholicism.
Yeah.
You can check out his other podcast, Skatin' with the Lord.
That's spelled S-K-A-T-I-N, by the way. Don't try to... The full thing is something completely different, so don't worry about it. All right. Well, without further ado, now for real, let's get into City of God. So Letterboxd has City of God as, if you run, you're dead. If you stay, you're dead again, period. Ciudad de Dios is a shanty town that started during the 1960s and became one of Rio de Janeiro's most dangerous places in the beginning of the 1980s. To tell the story of this place, the movie describes the life of various characters, all seen by the point of view of the narrator, Buscape. Buscape was raised in a very violent environment. Despite the feeling that all odds were against him, he finds out that life can be seen with other eyes. No, that's a bit vague in my book.
I think you can describe this movie in easily one of our trademarked Kino Clash four-word exposés.
Go for it.
City of God good.
I think,
City of God bad.
You know, probably a rocket-like film, dice-like mass murder. You know, I think
sure
gets the point across. All we need.
Yeah. So, Alex, you hadn't seen this, right?
Correct. Kyle, you've seen this?
I have seen this. I watched this about a year ago with my father and mother.
Pleasant.
My mom did not watch the entire movie.
Okay. Well, can I start with? Yeah, I guess I'll start
for sure.
So, as you just said, first time watching this, I'd never even heard of it. Honestly, I thought it was a very different kind of movie. I didn't even know it was Portuguese, but yeah, so I'm never going to watch this movie again in my life.
Aww.
No. It was an amazing movie. It was fantastic, but it's a movie that I hated the way I felt watching it. I wanted to just stop watching it so many times with just the kind of like brutality of it, but Positive things. It's super dynamic. It was super beautiful. I'll jump into that when we actually talk about specific parts, but no, I mean, the acting all around was amazing. I read some of the behind the scenes and like, they got like actual local people, non-actors from the City of God, which was super cool. The production was just so immersive. It was such a brutal, real, visceral movie, and So credit to the filmmakers, but it's because of that I don't want to watch it again, because I just felt so disgusting.
I'll actually take it from that one, because so I watched this for the second time, and I watched it with Paige, who watched it for the first time. Paige, for any new Kino Kyle's Flash dog. Listeners, is my pet parrot. We went the same direction.
Wait, what did you say? Did you say parrot?
Yeah, I said my pet parrot.
Yeah, no, I was confused. It's a parrot.
Anywho, so I watched this movie for the first time like a year ago, and I it's one of the few movies that I do count as a perfect movie. I think this is incredible, and I'm so upset. I said this to Ryan the other day. It should be illegal for him to have Akira and this on his bracket. And neither of them crack single-digit numbers. Irritating. Nonetheless. So I really like it, clearly. But also, I am not as put off by it as you are. Or as Paige was. Paige was literally sobbing at the end of it and said, I did not like this. I do not want to watch this again. Like, very similar reaction to you, Alex, whereas, like, I could easily pop this in. Like, it doesn't viscerally affect me like that. But yeah, that being said, I love this movie. I love it. It is so freaking good.
Yeah, so I pretty much agree with everything you guys said. I will say it goes down easier the second time. I remember just how shocking this movie was when I first saw it. And yeah, I can't agree more with everything you guys have said. The production feels so authentic that you truly feel like you've become a part of the movie. And it's violent. It has great music, great characters, excellent acting. It just has so much personality that I haven't seen in another movie. That like, there's no other movie that feels like this. It's kind of a common trend with me is I like movies that really put you in the spot, and this definitely does that, for better or for worse, as far as your own personal enjoyment of that kind of environment. But yeah, I think this movie is excellent. Pretty much everything about it is great. The only thing, I did like it, I guess, slightly less this time, because this is also the only movie on my list that I had only seen once, but it left a big enough impact on me that I wanted to include it in my top 16. And I think it justifies its place still, but the editing in some moments I wasn't like 100% in love with. And that's literally just moments. That's the only thing that really detracts. But yeah, everything else just has so much personality and such a great vision, and you can't get something like this anywhere else. So that is what I get from it. where to start?
I think ease our way in. I kind of agree with you on the editing. And some of the, like, I liked how you said it, because I do think that the production and editing is very over the top at a lot of points as well. As like one of the few detractors of this, which I'm not even going to fault it for, and we talked about this as well, some 2000s energy is still kind of bleached in this. Like, we have some very Snatch-esque transitions at points of like, and like shaky camera and whatnot, which I'm not a personal fan of. But
yeah,
you know, I
specifically the like the flashbacks, I wasn't super in on those. I mean, I get that they're important, but like a lot of times just, I don't know, it felt cliche with a lot of the editing flashbacks.
See,
like how they kind of transitioned.
For me, I feel like this movie did it the best out of that kind of cliche. Because I love those flashbacks, yeah, whenever they're introduced, like, I guess both times with Lil Dice. Spoilers. Both when he kills Rocket's brother, and also when he takes over the drug business. Like, I love how they just kind of introduce into the situation, like, oh, it's all cheerful, and then Rocket's like, all right, but here's the real story, and kind of flashes you back and catches you back up to that moment. I loved it. I thought it was done super well.
I do like that moment, especially. I was more talking about, like, at the very end, when the kid flashes back that Knockout Ned killed his father in the bank, like that felt a little ham-fisted to me. And that's like one of the very few moments. That one didn't do it for me. Like, honestly, off the top of my head, that's the only one I can really think of that bothered me. Like, that one I actively was like, yeah, that's kind of lame. But no, the way they show Lil Dice and Lil Zay and how they characterize him and just kind of give you, spoon-feed you information, really, with just his heinous acts over the years, I think is really great. And it paints him as a perfect villain. I mean, he's scary. He's manic. You never know what he's going to do. It's really entertaining to watch.
Lil Dice, the kid actor and the adult actor, were so incredibly perfect,
mm-hmm.
but too much so.
I think the kid actor is scarier.
The first moment of this movie where I was like, oof, this is getting tough to watch, is when the kid actor gets his gun and starts shooting all the people in the motel, and he starts laughing maniacally, very Joker-esque. I couldn't. That's the point where my hair stood up my arms, and I was like, what movie am I in for? Yeah, this movie is just exceptionally good at making you feel exactly how they want to make you feel. When they want to make you shocked, you're like just blown off your feet shocked. When you need to feel like terrified, like I was, any moment a character was on screen with a gun, just kind of waving it around, like a kid who just got a gun for the first time, which kind of figuring out and pointing at themselves or whatever, the entire time I was just on edge, just like this is just such a, I mean, it's such a culture shock, right? Like, it's just, we literally can't relate to anything like this. And so this just doesn't, it's so outlandish, it doesn't seem real, but it is real. And it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah. It's almost presented with, like, some humor. And I...
Oh, 100%.
That's what's so insane about it. Like, if any other movie, like, set in America or Europe, for example, tried to pull this kind of stuff, it would be ridiculous, but this movie somehow makes it feel so authentic and believable and grounded, and it's terrifying, kind of funny in a kind of messed up way, and it's so different, like you said, Alex, than anything that we would ever see or experience. That's by far like one of the greatest strengths of the movie, is just how authentic all these insane things feel. That's hard to balance.
I think the scene that really encapsulates that, it's the, I think, you know, is like as disturbing as when he's shooting all the people in the motel, is when it's showing what he's become over the past 18 years. And it's just shot on, it's a upward angle looking at Lil Dice, and it's just him shooting for like 15 seconds,
just laughing
and just screams and him smiling.
Yeah,
and it's a funny scene. It is funny, but it's also like, holy shit, this guy is insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the editing really lends to all these things too. The editing, I think, really elevates what you're seeing. I don't know how I would feel about it if it was like still cams or like a wide shot or something. I like how claustrophobic and manic everything feels. Those editing choices almost feel comforting given what's happening on screen. Like, these editing choices are like the one thing I can grab onto and be like, this is, I kind of recognize this. This is somewhat normal.
That's a good point. Like that.
Otherwise you're just in the slums, just in this horrible, violent environment. That's like the only thing you can grab onto.
The editing almost brings you back to like, okay, this is a movie. Like, I'm not watching like some boots on the ground documentary. Like, this should be considered fictional, and I thought it was fictional until the end. And yeah, the editing is really what keeps you there. My favorite edit was the Lego Star Wars style edit where the kid from Lil Dice's gang gets over to Carrots and he runs away, and they kind of split the camera into two scenes with the kid running away in the alley, and then they keep it on the... You know what I'm talking about, the Lego Star Wars games?
They do a couple of those, but yeah.
I love it.
I know exactly what you're talking about now. But not ringing the bell at first.
When your player gets too far away from each other, but the screen splits apart.
Yeah, we all know.
That's funny. Yeah.
Well, this is probably a good moment to digress into when is the Star Wars, the Skywalker saga coming out? It was announced easily 3 years ago.
I think it's in like May or something. Hold up. Keep talking.
Shit, mate.
April 5th.
Wow. That's in like a month. I didn't know it was coming out. Like, I haven't heard anything about it for a long time.
Anyway, this brief break from the City of God was brought to you by...
Lego.
Lego Star Wars, The Skywalker Saga.
Get it April 5th on PlayStation 5, 4, Xbox, and
Nintendo
Steam.
Switch. That's what I'm getting on.
Yeah, and then...
Don't forget about Stadia.
And Stadia.
I think canonically they're our biggest sponsor, actually.
States, LucasArts Games, or whoever makes Lego. Yeah, coming soon, Lego City of God. What do you think that scene where he makes the kid kill the other kid would look like in Lego?
I think it would look the exact same.
The Lego Yoda scream.
But it would be like the class.
And that's probably a nice enough transition to what is probably the most disturbing scene in this movie, and maybe movies ever.
That scene is what I'm saying. Like, the acting wasn't acting. Like, this was just real people getting shot. I don't get where they picked some of these people up to be in this movie.
I'm genuinely curious what they did to that kid. Because he was bawling, and that is not how a kid who's acting cries. Like, what did they do to him?
Hey, anything in pursuit of art.
Yeah. I mean, it's an electric scene. I'll give him that. Like, yeah, the authenticity of the film, I think, is its strongest aspect. I mean, the editing is great and the acting and everything, but just how alive they made every scene feel. I mean, it absolutely feels like you just have a glimpse into that world for a second. And at no moment do I doubt what's happening on screen or anything like that. I mean, genuinely trying to think of it, even in my list and even in any of our lists, like, I don't think there's another movie that captures that kind of authentic view of... Well, I mean, at least in my mind. Obviously, I have no frame of reference for this, but... I mean, it does exactly what I feel to do in making you feel like you're there.
It's what makes it so interesting as a movie as well, because, so they do a lot of these, like, really movie-esque cuts and edits and scene changes. Like, they'll put, oh, this is the next part of the story just up on there. But then I was watching a video on it as well, and... They purposefully made it feel like a documentary. They filmed it all on 16mm instead of 35. So it looks a lot more grainy and like your traditional documentary. The fact that it's able to thread both those needles so well is remarkable.
I think that's like and I agree. It really does feel like a documentary in a weird way. Like, you know it's not because of the content, but, like, as you're seeing it and you're seeing the chapters and everything, you really feel like you're seeing a story play out in real life. And that's the crazy thing about the ending. I had totally forgotten. I like how the last line, they don't settle on it or, like, try to harp on it or anything at the beginning. The last line of the movie, like, this happened in real life or whatever.
This is a true story, yeah.
It's like you find out at the very, very end that it's based on a true story. And that just, like, you're already feeling totally crazed out by what you've been seeing. You're like, oh, man. Like,
this
really happened.
I loved that so much. Because, like, normally when you watch,
I forgot about it.
Sorry?
I just said, like, I forgot about it going into this view.
Yeah. Like, normally when you watch, like, some crazy true story that gets adapted into a biopic or whatever, the whole time you're like, oh, wow, this is crazy. This is real. Wow, that happened, really? Versus this movie, is you're watching this crazy story that you hate to love, and you're already super engrossed in it, so you already have that awesome experience. And then when it drops that bomb on you, this is a true story, then you spend, like, the next 10 minutes just, like, reflecting on the movie, and then having that experience of, wow, that was real? Oh, my God, I can't believe that happened. And so the whole, like, I just got, like, two whole perspectives on this movie by the time it ended, and I wish more movies did something like that. I wish, like, we knew... I'm so glad I knew nothing about this movie, because going into it blindly, I got so much out of it.
So you two both didn't, because I also on my first viewing, like, I was sitting there the whole time and I was like, Jesus, this would be crazy if this was true. And like, I wonder if this is true. And then it goes and you're like, oh shit. But yeah, with Paige yesterday, she didn't get blindsided by it at all. She was by the end, she was like, of course it was fucking Drew. And was angry about it. But yeah, dude, like,
yeah, and yeah, like I said, I totally forgot about it. I always like, and I don't know, it's kind of cliche, I guess, but it's the credits, so who cares? But like when they show the real life counterpart to the actor, I always think that's so interesting. So I think that was strong here.
Yeah, nothing wrong with the cliche.
It adds to it a lot in this case, because like, yeah, you're seeing the real.
No, the Knockout Ned interviews specifically.
Yeah, you see the faces behind the story, and you're just like, oh my god, like this is nuts.
See, that's where I disagree, and I probably will have the minority here, but I'm very, like, this is what I was saying to Paige at the end. I'm like, yay, Rocket's a reporter now!
I mean, genuinely, I think I'm in the same boat. Like,
I had a much better feeling by the end.
It's more hopeful without Lil Zay alive, for one. I have no doubt that the war continued for whatever reason. I mean, that's just the kind of thing that is going to persist when that's the environment. there's no sort of there's no moral ground to stop. So yeah, I felt good about Rocket and Lose being dead, but I mean, it's a dour situation clearly, and I think that's the point of the movie, how bad it was to live there. Like how awful that part of the world was. I don't know. Yeah, I just find this movie really entrancing, electrifying. Like it's a train wreck. Absolutely. You just can't look away. And yeah, I don't know. I feel bad. I think you guys should watch it again in the future. Maybe give it some time. But the pill goes down a little easier that second time.
I'm sure. No, I'm totally sure that a second viewing would be much less abrasive. Because the brutality of this really came from the shock factor of almost every scene. And now that I know what I'm walking into, it's a matter of just like, okay, I'm going to see a kid get shot in the foot and cry like he actually got shot in the foot. But you know what? I've seen worse in movies sometimes. And the shock factor is gone. But I just don't want to. And please don't make me, is what I'm saying.
That's up to you, voters.
Yeah. I don't know. I really, I guess, respond to that kind of experience. Like I said, this is the only it's the only movie I've only seen once on my list, and it really stuck with me. And I had forgotten many of the elements, but some of the more just insane moments are what brought me back to it. And I remembered the production value and just how great every element was. So I was happy to watch it again. I don't know. That's been probably 2 years ago now, though. So...
Yeah. No, I mean, this movie has just truly what makes it so visceral and authentic is, and it's super commendable, is their like determination to film in the City of God, like for real. I think from what I read, like they tried filming most of it in the City of God, but it was truly just so dangerous to film there that they filmed in like a neighboring city. But I think all the actors are from the real City of God. This movie's, I think so. I think that's what I read. And this movie's use of like what you all mentioned, just like so much handheld cam. It's not really like a documentary style. It's almost like you're a fly on the wall. Like you're just a passive observer. Cause like you said, District 9 is almost leaning to the documentary style versus this. It's just like you are just observing the terror and just the events of the City of God.
I think that's the point. I think you're meant to be from the perspective of Rocket. I mean, truly. So, I mean, mission accomplished. Absolutely. That's exactly what it feels like. You're there at every moment. Like Rocket is always just on the edge of danger, just like you feel as the audience member. So, who's everybody's favorite character?
Oh, I was actually going to ask the same question, Ryan.
For me, it has to be Benny.
I like Benny.
Benny, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Benny's the coolest hood. Dude, everybody knows.
Benny
it.
Was so charming. He had me charmed. Like, I was heartbroken when he died.
For me, it's Knockout Ned. His story is
great characters.
And that was actually the question. What do you guys feel about his story and how he ends? Do you feel sympathy for the character still, or is it like the kid?
Oh, I don't feel sympathy in that. Like, oh, that kid, like he had it coming from that kid. It's more like, yeah, I knew who was gonna die, and his turn from no innocent people to kind of becoming a hood member like everyone else. I didn't really sympathize for him too much, but
I thought that was a good line.
I didn't
like the third exception becomes the rule.
Yeah, I didn't sympathize for him as a fictional movie character, but when he became a real person character, the situation changed.
I sympathize. I very much so am like, yeah, what goes around comes around, but also like, what a tragic story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically the second act is about him.
Like war was coming one way or another, like is what it boils down to. And for no good reason. I mean, Lose is just absolutely insane. And so, I don't know. It's the kind of thing. It's kind of fight or flight. Like, you got to do what you got to do to survive. If that means like robbing people to supply a war to keep you alive, then I guess by all means. Because, what else do you tell somebody from there? Like, what else is the takeaway? Just by all means, just do what you got to do. Seems about the only way to survive.
I think that might be my favorite part of the movie. When Knockout Ned is sitting in the kitchen and he's saying, "Oh my, why didn't he kill me?" And then we have that truly hilarious transition where they're all walking and it pans in on Lulzy. Wait a minute, why didn't I kill him?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I got, like, truly, I enjoy the character of Little Z quite a bit.
He terrifies me.
Like, he's a psychopath, but, like, it definitely falls into the, like, oh, I'm infatuated with you. I want to see what you do next, you crazy
motherfucker. I want to kiss you on the cheek.
I want to say, go get him, Little Z, but don't fornicate in that necklace. Don't fornicate in that necklace.
Forget about that.
That's another aspect I'm a really big fan of, too. I like that is as Chekhov's gun as you can get. Hang it. And here we go.
Yeah. I don't know. You guys have anything else? Or?
For me, the only like just big thing we haven't really talked about, I mean, we did, but not too in-depth, is it's just the acting all around. Everyone was unbelievable. Rocket was such an endearing character, and I loved his... I mean, I think this is based off, like... He didn't direct it, right? The real Rocket didn't direct it. No. I think it's based off of, like, Rocket's, like, autobiography or something. But...
Yeah, this was a book.
Yeah. So his inclusion in the movie,
oh,
just...
I didn't know that.
He was such... Just like the editing, what you said, Ryan, he was such a source of comfort and, like, taking me back to my reality of, like, okay... There is some good in the world. He. If it wasn't for him, this movie would have been truly too hard to watch. So he was a super nice source of comfort there. And then Benny, obviously. I mean, that actor both played off being like a really slick hood character who would like, you know, kill someone and deal drugs all day long because he has to protect himself. And also like a very caring person for the people he loves. And he knows Lizzie is this crazy psychopath, but he says, you know, I love you, man, but I got to go on my own path. So that actor just portrayed that whole character amazingly well.
Yeah. I really like those party scenes, just where he's like, yeah, Benny's so cool. He had everybody. Like, he could get all the crowds, all the different cliques together just to have a little disco. Like, I don't know. It's the thing. Like, you see these incredibly violent scenes, and then they're like having a disco like 5 minutes later. So I don't know. It's good within the bad, I guess, is the takeaway. But
I also, it's good. there's a line there I really like that Rocket's narrating about why Lil Z hated Knockout Ned so much. No, it's not there, but it's shortly after. And he basically goes, see, the problem is Lil Z was ugly. And so he could only get women by force or by paying them. Meanwhile, Knockout Ned was handsome. He was a handsome good guy, mm-hmm. so he could get anyone he wanted.
Like the classic hero villain.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
I'd say I just have one more thing. I liked in our last recording, Ryan, that you brought up what other movies came out that year. And I did a similar lookup for this one. And we have some also... it was a pretty big year in film as well. So this got snubbed for Best Picture. It did get nominated for Best Direction.
It didn't even win foreign.
It didn't win anything. It had four nominations.
No, it didn't win anything. But our other movies that came out this year were just had it. Yep. So the winner was Lord of the Rings: Return of the King.
Boo.
And some of our nominees were Lost in Translation, which I know three of us are huge fans of. Master and Commander, which is a movie I regret not putting on my list. So it's the 2004 Oscars, came out in 2003.
But yeah, Kyle, Master and Commander, I totally forgot about that until the other day. And I was like, why didn't Kyle put this on his list?
Talking about specials, I think one that we could do that would be fun would be honorable mentions. Because I watched Master and Commander a couple weeks back, and I was like, fuck, I should have put this on my list. I'm trying to see... I've never seen it, but Chicago also came out this year, which I'm aware is pretty well-regarded. And Brother Bear. but yeah, no. So again, a pretty good year of movies. You know, fair contenders to be sure. But yes, definitely should have been nominated. Well, Finding Nemo also came out, so he got staunch
Wasn't
competition.
Joaquin Phoenix the bear, the older bear?
I think
he's in Sisters Brothers as well. Bringing it full circle.
Full circle, baby.
Brother.
Sisters, brothers, Brother Bear. How do we do it? How do we do it here at Kino Clash, everybody? It's because we're God's chosen
people. And therefore, so are you, Kino Clashers. Kino Clashers, rise up.
Praise be the Kino Clash. Praise opens Kino windows that clash.
Kino Clash gives praise back to you.
That's a good spot to wrap it up.
Yeah. Final thoughts? Are we ready?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So... an amazing movie, a marvel of film, truly, in production, direction, acting, just, you're right, Kyle, it's close to just a perfect masterpiece of a movie. But it's so good at its job that I feel very icky when I watch it for most of the movie, and for that reason, I'm out. Just kidding. No, it's a great movie. Great movie, and I'm gonna. I hope it wins, but I also don't hope it wins.
Hey, don't go into Sisters Brothers.
Sorry.
It's gonna win.
I wasn't saying anything about Sisters Brothers. I was just saying it's such a great movie that it holds a strong chance.
To move forward. Yeah. No. I finished this movie, and I said the exact same thing I said after Pan's Labyrinth, which is, I'm so fucking tired of losing. Because this is... It's perfect. It's so fucking good. This is the movie I have winning it all. I'm not as comfortable in that anymore, considering how, you two reacted to it, but it is. I mean, it's fucking phenomenal. I'm not going to say more than that.
For that reason, you're in?
For that reason, I'm in. And you know what? Just because I've been hurt on this before, and I don't think there's any chance, but I just want to make it perfectly clear. No one is supposed to be a magician in the Sisters Brothers. Please don't go into it and assume that anyone will become a magician at the end. I just want to dissuade any notion.
Also, they don't have any sisters. They're just brothers.
Yeah, clearly I need to start putting more prefaces on these, but we'll keep trying.
Yeah.
Take us home.
All right. So all reactions, very well justified. I'm glad you guys appreciated like how great the filmmaking elements of this are, even if they were off-putting. This is a movie that I can't watch often, but when I do, it's entrancing. I think it delivers on all fronts. I think it's just really excellent. I don't think we even really talked about it since opening thoughts, but just like the music felt very genuine, and just everything about it felt just truly genuine. And it's a movie that totally sucks you away to a new world, and that's always what I look for in the movies that I really connect to. So yeah, this is one that spoke to me. So I mean, truly watching a movie one time and putting it in this is something that I only did once, but it was well worth it, because yeah, I truly enjoyed my experience once again with City of God. Great movie.
So with this Goliath being watched, we now head into my humble David, the Sisters Brothers.
It's not even see that humble. There, Sisters Brothers is great.
Yeah, but it's a little film. It's a little tiny film. It's gonna need quite the slingshot to make this.
I don't know. I feel like this is closer than Pulp Fiction: Edge of Tomorrow. Like, I think Pulp Fiction was a bigger Goliath there. This one, it's like I don't know. Maybe David has like a 9mm or something.
Either way, I am very excited for Sisters Brothers. And, I hope my heart is not crushed for like the umpteenth time on this podcast, because I do really love Sisters Brothers. So we'll find out, everybody. See if Kyle makes it till the end.
See you soon.
All right, and welcome back to episode.
Should be 13.
No, 13. I think it's 14.
I thought it was 14.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
Episode 14 of Kino Clash, and we're very happy to welcome back our longtime host and compatriot, Brendan.
Thank you.
Why don't you take a moment and just tell us what you've been up to for the past couple episodes, why you couldn't be here?
Well, I was trapped in...
Guatemala, right?
Yeah, Guatemala. I was going to say Ukraine.
Probably leave that out.
Yeah.
I feel like the actual story is pretty funny. You spilled a burrito on your computer and
yes,
fried it. Which I think is amazing.
So, well, I don't think that's what did it, but it definitely didn't help.
It didn't help. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
Or it could have. That could be the only reason you were able to recover what you did.
Potentially so. Potentially so. Anyway, due to computer troubles and foibles and our this week's sponsor, Jing OS, I was unable to record.
Well.
So shout out to... my favorite people on earth, the lovely group of people behind Jing OS. If you need an OS to
Jing. For all your Jing needs.
Well, either way, we're happy to have you back. And anyhow, Let's get into our four seed of this matchup, 2018's The Sisters Brothers. This is my pick, and I do, for once, have the description pulled up. This is Letterboxd. Make a killing, make a living. Oregon, 1851. Herman Kermit Warm, a chemist and aspiring gold prospector, keeps a profitable secret that the Commodore wants to know. So he sends the Sisters Brothers, two notorious assassins, to capture him on his way to California.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I think that's pretty much it.
That's both a perfect description and a really shitty description.
Well, expand on that.
Yeah, kick off. I'd say just kick into it, Brandon. Just get into it.
Well, to talk on the description that was just given, it's so like weirdly specific. Where it's like the Commodore.
It's like a summary.
Like, yeah, it feels a little bit too much.
I could see that.
I'll start with my thoughts on this movie. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought that it was a really fun Western movie. I know it was based on a book?
Yeah, a book from of the same name. Early 2010s.
Yeah, and it definitely has that sort of Western based on literature kind of feel to it, like kind of, you know, True Grit-ish. And that a lot of it is concerned with like creating these patterns and these cycles that you're able to sort of watch play out, which is fun. I really like that. I thought the performances were great. I would say that the weakest performer here is probably Jake Gyllenhaal. There were a lot of times that his accent really just it's like goofy sounding to me.
I could see that.
Like it felt disingenuous. Like it felt like an accent that was being put on. But other than that, I think everyone else was great. I thought that it kind of dragged a little bit in the middle. I would say there's like a big section before before they get to the what is the nice way of saying it? The
river, the prospecting
brothel.
Oh, the before they Mayfield. Get to the.
Yeah, before they get to the brothel, that I feel it kind of drags a little bit, where they're just kind of chasing Jake Gyllenhaal and Warm around. But once they get there and they have like a clear idea of where they need to go and what they need to do, movie picks up again, and it's right as rain all the way till the end, and then it ends with like one of the funniest like little like moments, I think, that we've seen in a movie for this
like
podcast.
Funny in a good way or funny in a bad way?
Funny in a good way. I love that. Okay. I love that moment.
Okay, cool. I'm glad.
Brendan, was this your first time watching this?
Yes, this was my first time seeing it. Okay. Kyle had been begging me to watch this movie for years, and I would always go, oh yeah, that's the other thing. So I would always go, whatever, because it was on Hulu. And I was like, well, whatever, it'll always be there. But then I couldn't remember my Hulu login when I was trying to watch this. So I watched it on Amazon Prime with ads. And let me tell you something. There was a moment where they go and make camp for the first time, and you see what is the guy's name? What is the actor's name? Not
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly?
Yeah, where you see John C. Reilly's like bedtime ritual for the first time, where he folds the shawl, he lays down, he puts his hand on his gun. Literally, he puts his hand on his gun, and then I just see a footage of a man eating a hot dog really obnoxiously, and I was like, wait, what is this? And then it was the ad starting up. So that did take me out of the movie at times. So, you know, whatever. I probably should have just paid for it, but. Or watched it when Kyle had told me to watch it originally. Both would have been better options than what I did. But I still very much enjoyed the movie.
I'm glad. I don't know how many of my movies it's been since you've enjoyed one, Brendan. So I'm very glad to hear this.
This was like a easy layup for me, because I have such a soft spot for Westerns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex, you want to go ahead? Because you hadn't seen this either, right? Or had you?
I had seen it once. Kyle showed it to me 4 years ago.
I don't think Alex gave it a very respectful watch the first time he watched it, and I've been bitter about it ever since.
Okay, see, I was trying to remember that, because I went to this movie going, like... I remember
which movie you showed me that was stupid.
When I put it on, I was like, did I like this movie or did I not like this movie? And I could not remember, because when I first watched The Aviator, I was like, oh, that's good. But then on the rewatch here, I really liked it. And so, yeah, I remember that I was meh about it, but I really liked it now that I watched it again. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a sucker for Westerns. I also haven't really seen that many Westerns, but I really like this one. It felt like just such a grounded little, I don't want to say wholesome, but it was very, like, I liked the intimacy of the relationship between the two brothers. I thought that was super well done, and I loved how real all the characters were. And then just this, like, adventure of just traveling through the countryside and meeting country folk and going through towns and shooting up some thugs or some bandits. I liked it a lot. And I love the ending so much. I just had a stupid smile on my face at the end. And when the music picks up, I literally just sat there at the credits watching that little sunset with the music and the credits. And I was like, this is such a peaceful little ending. But yeah, I really liked it a lot.
Guess I'll hop in. Yeah, I think this movie's great. I too watched this at Kyle's recommendation. I think it's great. It's got great production value, and it really sucks you into that world. It's got great colors, great shots. The acting is really wonderful. I like the music quite a bit. The story itself is, you know, it's simple enough, but it really takes you to interesting places. One of the things that I like so much about this is a lot of the gross out kind of things that happen. There's a lot of really nasty elements that I think are very well shown and executed. So yeah, it's a great watch. This is as good as a lot of the modern Westerns are. And there's not so many nowadays, obviously, but the ones that come out really need to say something, because there's such a wide pool to draw from there. And this is a movie
like
that
Logan.
Yeah, this is a movie that definitely, like, earns a spot, I would say, on that bench. So, yeah, I think this movie is great. I like all the performances. I do agree with Brendan, and I didn't even notice it till this time. But, yeah, the Jake Gyllenhaal performance was – it did feel a little disingenuous, and that's the only word I can really think about. It really just felt like Jake Gyllenhaal doing an accent as opposed to a character, you know? So, well,
and there's sometimes in his performance where – I can't tell if the, like, he's given, like, a weird smile, and I'm like, I don't know, I can't get a read on this character at all, because I can't tell what's, like, it feels like Jake Gyllenhaal's doing a bit, like, it's really...
Yeah, I could see that. And that's something I noticed this time around, because, I mean, another movie with, I don't remember the name of the character or the actor, but basically the guy that they're hunting after initially, that Jake Gyllenhaal is helping out with. That character that they're going after, and Jake Gyllenhaal were in Nightcrawler as well, and that's one where I can get a more firm grasp of Jake Gyllenhaal's character that he's doing. This one, not so much, but that's not a detractor at all.
Also,
really.
Like, there's, the one thing that detracted me from it was that, like, I at times could not buy that would trust Jake Gyllenhaal's character. Like, this guy looks. He sounds slimy.
Yeah. And I would say that's probably the strongest part of his character, is that he just has that kind of coy, clever nature that you can't really trust. And I think that was portrayed well. But, yeah, I mean, that's all to say, this is a great movie. One of my favorites of the last decade. I think everything about it is pretty great. Bar maybe the pacing on some points, and yeah, just maybe the Jake Gyllenhaal character, but yeah, I think this movie's awesome.
This one feels nice, fellas. It's been a bit of a rough stretch for old me, so it's nice to hear some nice that everybody enjoyed this one.
Yeah, this should be a positive episode all around.
I think so, and I gotta tell you what, not to go ahead and race to the end, this is a tough one for me. Because I finished Sisters Brothers last night. I was like, I like this movie, but jeezy wheezy, I like City of God a lot too. So I'm really happy with this matchup. So yeah, I watched this last night, probably first time since I watched it with Alex, and he didn't really pay that much attention, and he made me upset.
I paid attention.
And yeah, I was really excited to revisit this, and boy, do I. This is just such a beautiful movie to me. I love our two plots and our two performances between John C. Reilly and Joaquin Phoenix and Riz Ahmed. And I really like Jake Gyllenhaal's performance here. I can definitely see where y'all are coming from, that he's just kind of putting on an accent, but I really like how he plays the character. And I think kind of how you guys were saying that he is kind of like, I can't really tell with this guy. But I can certainly see where you're coming from. I'll completely agree with everything. I even got a little bored at some parts of it. But I think the biggest thing about this for me is, like, I entered watching it last night, and I'm like, yeah, all right, yeah, Sisters Brothers, I'm excited. And I think this is one of those movies that the longer it goes on, it's just kind of this crescendo that's building up and up and up, and it's like, yeah, okay, I'm getting really invested. I want to see what happens. And then because of that, I think this movie probably has the best climax on my list, and it is the scene I think about every time I think about this movie. So that being said, that's kind of where I want to jump in to start. You guys thought about.
Let us know, what scene are you talking about in particular?
I think the climax is pretty much when they're panning for gold.
And it's, yeah, that's what that's what I was thinking as well. I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah, no, whenever I think about this, first off, I just, like, that frame of that scene of just the dark, but the water's got that nice little glow to it, mm-hmm. Is just, and I mean, you know, it's not even, I don't think it's great CGI even, but it's just beautiful to me. Like, I every time I see it, I'm like, God, that's gorgeous.
I was going to say that, like, I mean, the way that they use lighting and specifically these, like, very, like, low-light situations, like, you even see at the start of the movie when it opens and it's just the flashes of the gunshots and that open field, like,
yeah,
by the
definitely.
Barn.
Yeah,
that, I mean, literally as a way to open the movie, I was immediately like, this movie spent, like, the 10 extra dollars to make these gunshots look nice. Because, like, it didn't just look like the regular, like, blanks going off.
Oh, no.
They had swirls of smoke
like,
and stuff.
It looked
like
explosions coming out every shot. Yeah. It looked and sounded immaculate. I don't know if that's what old guns looked like when they fired, but that's what I feel like they look like.
Yeah, that's what I want them to look like.
Yeah, that's what I want them to look like on film, at least. Like, yeah, it was immaculate. It looked great.
I'm glad y'all picked up on that, because that is easily one of my favorite parts. I like, because yeah, just it's like this just cannon of sparks. And also, I guess to kind of shift a little bit away, because this was one of the things I wanted to talk about. I think how they portray the guns and then how the actors handle them works really well too. Because like the scene that comes to my mind is when Joaquin Phoenix is hammered and he's out of the bar and he's just shooting, and it looks like he's just shooting like fireworks. He's just like,
holding a Roman candle.
Yeah, no, legitimately.
Yeah, that's kind of in my opening thoughts. The production level of this movie is just great. I mean, I there's not a single moment where I doubt the world that this movie displays. It's excellent.
Yeah. No, I want to jump into that a lot too, because I think for me, definitely, the amount of detail in this movie about what it's like to be in the West.
So authentic.
Well, here, if we don't mind, I'm going to try and steer us back to talking about that climax real quick.
Oh yeah, yeah. Of course. I
want to talk about it too, because
yeah,
if I can throw in something, like you said, it just the way that scene is shot and the way it looks, it feels like magic, which is exactly how it feels to those characters. And I think that is so effective because it just seems like a miracle that you throw this material or this chemical in the water and you just pick up the gold. And it plays on the audience's own sense of greed. It's like, oh, man. Why wouldn't you just load that river up with that poison and pick up the gold? Like, it's so addictive, and like, kind of you can feel exactly what the characters are feeling.
It draws you in so good.
Yeah, it's magnetic.
To that magical element, I love how they built up the chemical with the whole movie. Him saying like, "Oh, I have a formula," and they're like, yeah. And they're all just like kind of doubting the science. But then even when the sisters brothers get there, they're like, "Well, have you done it yet?" And then he goes, "Oh yeah, 2 days ago, and it's better than I ever imagined." Like at that point, I was like, "Oh shit, this is real." And yeah, it just pays off so well when they actually end up using it, because you're right there with them, where you're like, "This doesn't seem like real science. This is something surreal."
Yeah, it's like a miraculous quality, and I think you're right, Kyle. Like, it is probably CGI, right, that they put over the water, but it looks fine. It's very effective in its presentation. It's something that, like, I don't know what something like that would look like in person, and so my suspense of disbelief is completely proportionate to what's being shown. Like, I never doubt what I'm seeing. It's a really effective scene.
No, I magical is a great word for it, and I really like it. And I think that also what you were saying, Alex, kind of plays to why I think it's such a powerful scene, because you're right. Like, you are kind of tracking this thing, and it's like every time it's like, oh, yeah, you know, it is. There's been countless men who have said, oh, I've got the miracle product. But then, yeah, we finally get to it. And then that's what the crescendo builds up to, and it's just this gorgeous scene. And then it what gets me is then it just fucking uppercuts the shit out of you.
Yeah. Then it gets to what I was talking about with the gross out materials. And all that stuff was set up beforehand, but like the chemical scarring of the main cast is horrendous. And
because again, it's so, you know, they've got this nice little like almost fairy tale music playing overhead. And then, yeah, Charlie, played by Joaquin Phoenix, who's a bit dim. It's like what you were saying. It's like, oh shit, yeah, no, the gold's going away. We need to get more in here. And then so this magical little fairy tale scene in a snap of fingers turns from that to one of the most brutal scenes in film I've seen.
Yeah.
The music cuts out, and it is just screaming of these men being burned alive by chemicals.
Yeah, that can kind of bring us into it, I guess. The gross out materials, it's so good. They did such a good job with makeup and special effects and practical effects. Another one that comes to mind, besides the chemical scarring, is when John C. Reilly vomits up blood and spiders. Like, there's just so much in this movie that gets under your skin. It's like, that is nasty. I can't believe I'm watching this. But it's also played very straight, and it's not meant to be like a shock factor thing. It's just meant to kind of show the brutality of what they're going through, I guess, on an everyday basis. And that just really lends to the characterization of everybody. It really tells you the journey they're going on when you see these disgusting elements. It's awesome.
I was reflecting on it last night, and I think it's a really good matchup for City of God for that reason, because I forgot how much of a world this puts you in. And it's like, yeah, the characters, like, and it made me think of your point in Inside Llewyn Davis, Brendan, of like when you were saying when he steps in the puddle of water and his sock is wet, and you're like, I know what that feels like. I think there's so many moments of that here, but amplified by 10. Like when Joaquin Phoenix is hung over like a dog and he can't, but he's got shit to do. And he can't even ride his horse. It's like, I know what that feels like. I don't like that very much.
Yeah, lots of vomit in this movie.
Lots of vomit.
To touch on the climax real quick, that I love that scene as much as you guys did, but it's also the source of my, it's kind of a nitpick, but it's my biggest gripe with this movie. And it's John Morris's character after he's been chemically burned and all that. And then he asks Joaquin Phoenix to like kind of help him and put him out of his misery. I don't know about you guys, but I feel like that character would not have shot himself first. He would have tried to kill Joaquin Phoenix because he caused this whole chemical burn that's kind of making him want to kill himself. And so I kind of didn't buy how he just kind of has to put him out of his misery and kills himself right next to him. I feel like there should have been like a bit of a vengeance thing going on there, because and kind of throughout the whole movie they kind of allude to how there's a feud between those two characters and that they're just really not on the same page, you know, by like following Warm and like his view of like a utopian city in Texas. So I don't know. I feel like that was just out of character.
See, I see that point, and a point that I always think about too is that I think rather than that, I think John Morris would want to see Herman Kermit Warm one last time before he dies, because they've created such a good relationship. But I always take that as a testament to the amount of pain that he is in at that point. And he's yeah. like, I just have to die. Like, I am... Just kill me.
Yeah.
Please.
And what you brought up, Alex, I think that would be an interesting plot point had it happened, but... Yeah, I don't doubt that he's immobile at that point. I don't doubt that unable to do anything. Yeah, I think at that point, mentally and physically, you're so prepared to die that no sense of distaste for another person would ever call for revenge when you're in that much pain. You're just like, none of it's worth it. I would rather just die.
I'll tell you
what. I can see that, but...
Oh, go on.
I was going to say, I can see all that, but being in that immense pain where he just wants to end his life, I can also see just the immense amount of anger and hatred he has for Charlie Sisters. And he's also, Charlie Sisters is also wounded and limping and barely able to do anything. So I feel like it's at his weakest point. I think even after he hands him the gun, Charlie turns around not to look at it. So he could have easily just shot him in the back there. I don't know. I feel like clearly it was possible for it, and they had a different, you know, vision for this movie, but because of the decision they made, I feel like it was just really out of character for John Morris.
I just kind of take it as he's not even a person anymore at that point. He's a corpse that's alive. You know, like, he's not, because again, that's like, he doesn't even, like, Herman asks about John on his deathbed. I think there's still a little bit of personhood there, but John doesn't even ask. He's like, no, I need to be dead now. But I definitely see your point, Alex, and I agree. It would have been an interesting way to take it, but I certainly prefer the way they did it.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it either way, and I love how it was shown here. So, yeah, I think that whole part of the movie was very well explored.
No, one last point to mention on this, about the climax again. So, you know, we get this beautiful little scene, and then you get the uppercut, and then so it's shot of just the brutal screaming, and then chaser of, because it's a hard cut, just like perfectly cut screams, and it is this bone dry, whitewashed shot, and just everything looks like death. Like, it's super hyper-intense lighting. And it's... I think the scene that follows is as painful to watch as is when they're getting burned alive. In a different sense, but yeah.
Yeah. Because at that point, you've had context for the character relationships, and you get the sense that even though all of these characters have had their differences, they've, in that moment when they were so overjoyed to be finding gold and everything, in that moment, that was the peak of their relationship. They were, mm-hmm. they couldn't have been happier. They couldn't have been more trustworthy or willing to accept the other people around them. And all of that was lost so quickly. So the stark contrast between their overwhelming joy and them literally dying is, I mean, it's palpable. It's hard to deny just how effective that was. And goodness, it's just brutal, emotionally and physically for characters and the audience. It's very effective at bringing you into with all these characters, whether you liked any of them or disliked any of them more or less than the others, at that point you're on the same page as all of them. You're like, oh my gosh, they can make it. They can make it out of this life that they've had before. And then it's just gone in an instant. Yep. And I think that's a really powerful portion of the movie, because it just shows how fragile they are. It never strays away from showing how fragile these characters are.
Yeah, and kind of along that point, me just kind of reminiscing on it, it's also kind of more tragic that the only two characters that didn't make it out were the two characters striving for this like better future for the country.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like the dream dies with them, and then now you're left with these two serial killers who one of them kind of understands it, the other one is just completely not on board. And then so it's just kind of like, we got to go about our lives now. And unfortunately, you know, none of that we're going to take with us.
I think that's a big takeaway of the movie, truth be told, is that this violence is prevalent and rewarded. And like, yeah. people who acted like this oftentimes didn't face consequences when people who were trying to do the right thing did. I think that was very well portrayed in this movie. That's definitely a theme throughout, I would say.
I think that, you know, they, like Ryan said, that is a theme that's present at all points in the movie, because, you know, the way that John C. Reilly's character is treated in comparison to Joaquin Phoenix's is so interesting, where it's like, it seems like Joaquin Phoenix is favored. You know, he's been made the lead man at the beginning of the movie, whereas John C. Reilly is clearly the more like well-spoken and thoughtful member of the group, but is like an afterthought. He's paid less.
Yeah.
I really like that specifically too, as kind of a different, because I feel like, you know, in this genre specifically, Joaquin Phoenix's character is normally the lead man. Like, we want the gunslinger. I mean, not necessarily, you know, maybe not someone so brutal, but like, you know, we want, Westerns are very shoot first, ask questions later. And so I really like that John C. Reilly as this kind of timid, like, I'm just doing this to make a living and then I want to get out, is our focus throughout the movie.
Yeah, and his performance is so fantastic. Like, I love the scene where they're getting into an argument over why they're always behind Warm and Morris. Like, because they just got information, yeah, that Warm and Morris had just left the town that they were passing through, and they're like, and then Joaquin Phoenix is like, well, you and your spells getting us lost in that forest. And then John C. Reilly going, my spells.
I ate a fucking so spider.
Yeah. I liked how thoughtful John C. Reilly was, and just what an interesting perspective that brought to the film, because, like you said, Westerns are often shoot first and ask questions later, and that's usually fine, but in a movie like this, it really adds a lot to have that kind of, it almost feels like a modern perspective. That's really presented well with him interacting with new technologies and whatnot, and that plays into the humor as well. It's like, just the wonder that his character sees in, like, experiencing a toothbrush, experiencing a toilet, like, all that stuff is so great, and it brings such a fresh perspective, and it's funny from the audience perspective, but it's endearing as well, because you know that he's trying to better himself. He's trying to move to the next century, whereas Charlie is stuck in the past, and that kind of dichotomy is so effective. Especially among brothers, that's another really powerful.
Well, yeah, especially among brothers, where the older brother is the one who's actually making more of the effort, where the younger brother is stuck in the past.
Yes, yeah, and I think that's a theme that's also prevalent throughout, is the thing about brothers and just kind of family relationships and how that kind of shapes your worldview. It's another really excellently portrayed part of the movie. Like, it's wonderful.
One of my favorite part, I would say definitely my favorite part of the movie is once the sisters brothers are with John and Herman, and it's the, like, kind of not montage, but, like, you know, the little part of the story when they're setting up for the gold.
Yeah.
I really like when we get that little bit of backstory about the Sisters Brothers, and John C. Reilly explains that, yeah, no, Charlie killed our father, and he hasn't been the same since. And so, like, yeah, this guy's just been a violent psychopath since he was probably, like, 13. And John C. Reilly still carries that guilt with him.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, too, because it's certainly guilt, because he's like, yeah, that should have been me. But I think that's part of just his characterization of being the quote-unquote modern man, being the person that future generations would be like in that context. I mean, I'm sure he has the kind of foresight, or at least his character is portrayed to have that foresight to see the direction that things are going in, and seeing that gentlemen are the way of the future, as opposed to renegades and cowboys in the West, bounty hunters. He can see that this life that they have is not going to last, whereas Charlie, played by Joaquin Phoenix, just does not. That relationship as brothers especially is highlighted. And I love that scene as well. I love that part where he's like, yeah, Charlie killed our father, and it should have been me. And I think that's really powerful.
Well, and it's also very interesting to examine both of the sisters' brothers and their relationship to their father, because while Charlie killed their father, Charlie sort of venerates their father consistently throughout the movie, saying, like, well, it's his blood that makes us good at what we do and all this stuff, where it's like you can see that that John C. Reilly's character is like, yeah, I would rather just not rather just not talk about him.
I thought that was really interesting.
I think a good, and it's one of my favorite parts of the movie that speaks to that, is when Joaquin Phoenix is like, it's like out of the blue, and it's because John C. Reilly hasn't even said anything, but Joaquin Phoenix is like jealous that John C. Reilly has this school teacher back home that he's infatuated with, and he's just like, well, you can't have children because our father was stark raving mad. And then John C. Reilly just hits him back with, he drank. It wasn't. he just drank a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah. Which is such a dig at him because he's an alcoholic.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. That for sure. Because another great thing about how these characters were portrayed. Charlie is just incredibly violent, and he drinks a lot, and he whores around and whatnot, and John C. Reilly just doesn't. And I like especially that scene where Eli, John C. Reilly's character, is with a prostitute, and she refuses him service. So she's like, I'm sorry, like, you're just too kind. That's another moment. It's just like you can see how much that Eli wants to be something more than just a bounty hunter. Whereas Charlie has like three girls around his arms at all times. He's drunk off his ass, and yeah, it's a really, really effective characterization.
Kind of backtrack about some of how detailed this world is. You brought up the toothbrush, which is maybe my favorite element of this movie. The scene of John C. Reilly brushing his teeth like a caveman, and Jake Gyllenhaal comes out like a little preppy boy, like,
yeah, he's brushing his teeth like a modern man, and John C. Reilly's like, oh, that's my boy right there, he knows.
He's like, hey,
yeah,
we're one and the same, man.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, see, I took the scene a little differently, because after he sees John Morris brushing his teeth naturally, he kind of feels embarrassed because he wants to be cool like John Morris. And so he kind of like wipes his mouth from like the mess he's making, and then kind of tilts the toothbrush in a more natural way instead of the vertical way. And so he's kind of like, yeah, I'm cool like you. Like, just don't look at what I was doing before.
He's like,
so that was, again, super endearing.
Yeah. He's sheepish about it. He wants to be like, oh, yeah, this is what a cultured man brushes his teeth like. It is so funny. I thought all of the technology moments were really funny.
When John C. Reilly's comedic chops definitely lend so much to it. Like when he flushes the toilet and he goes, Charlie, you gotta come see this.
Yeah. It's great.
that kind of stuff. There's a scene when they're in San Francisco when they're moving ice blocks in the background to like this fancy hotel. That's another one that's like, what insane, you know, they don't make a big thing of it. It's just in the background. But what insane attention to detail and like mm-hmm. way to just set yeah. the world.
Yeah. They clearly had a very firm grasp of the time period and the technologies surrounding it.
And
they implemented that in the story so wonderfully. Like they made it part of the characters, they made it part of the environment, they made it part of the story. Like it's all very cohesive, and you just feel like you're getting a glimpse of life in this time period.
Well, and in a way, like it shows that sort of end of the West, or end of the Wild West, like time period, yeah. way better than a lot of other movies who are more directly trying to portray that. Because like, when you look at a movie like Unforgiven, which is fantastic in its own right, Unforgiven is like kind of like it's trying to be this big allegory for like the last gunslinger in the West, and this is like the end of this. But it's like they don't. There's not a whole lot of like, here's how things have been progressing as a society or as a country. It's just kind of like, no, look, gunslinger from old. Movies old now. Sad, isn't it?
Boy is old.
But I like how this movie, it's like, even though none of the characters are famous Western actors who are now aged, it does a lot to give you that feeling that like this is a time and place that is coming to an end and that the world is moving on from it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just so satisfying to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it always, it catches me off guard too. Like when they get to San Francisco and there's electricity and you're like, oh shit. Oh, like things are happening. You know, cause yeah. it's the first time you've seen it all movie. Yeah, no, I think this all just kind of speaks to like what I was saying of like, it's, you know, once we get to San Francisco, that's right before we get to the prospecting part. And it's like this, everything becomes bigger as the movie continues on. You know, we go from Mayfield, which is this classic Western town run by a basically mob boss. Which I, what did you guys think of the Mayfield sequence while we're here?
It was good.
It was good.
That's a point that I don't cling on to as much. I think San Francisco onwards is more of my speed. The Mayfield sequence was effective though, because that's when Charlie's whoring around, right? And and that's where Eli is rejected by a prostitute, and he's like, "I'll pay you." And she's like, "No, you're too nice." That lots of good moments in that. That one doesn't cling on to me quite as much as. Other parts of the movie, but yeah, still very effective in drawing you into that environment, I would say.
Mayfield just feels like an extension of that part of the movie, because like the last like two towns that they ride through are all kind of, you know, they all kind of have the same sort of feel to them, and that like, you know, Eli buys a toothbrush and watches his brother shoot up a saloon drunkenly, you know, it's like it's all kind of like an extension of that feel. So I just kind of lump it in with that grouping of moments in the movie, and I don't really think about it too much on its own.
It does a few things, I find. Oh, go on, Alex.
The Mayfield sequence had my favorite joke in the movie, and it's just like when they first arrive and Charlie's just making fun of how everything's named after Mayfield, and then after they kill her and yeah. leave, he goes, "You can change the name of your fucking town now."
Yeah. I was going to say, once they capture Mayfield, I think there is some of the best comedy in the movie. When Charlie's sitting there, he goes, "Well, Mayfield, you're not going to like what happens next."
I really love Joaquin Phoenix's performance in this movie, because his voice, he has such a specific voice that sounds like different than what you'd expect, because it's a little bit higher pitched.
Yeah.
And it's so unsettling when he goes into like, I don't know, strong arm mode, because it sounds scary.
He's a scary fucking dude.
He would make a great Joker.
Yeah, wouldn't he?
I mean, that's the thing.
But I want him to not eat for several months, and then he'll be a perfect Joker.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen a Joaquin Phoenix film where he hasn't stolen the show. I mean, legitimately, he always goes all in on the character, and there's never any doubt as to the character he's portraying. Like Jake Gyllenhaal here, it's like, is that just Jake Gyllenhaal with an accent? You don't have the same thing with Joaquin Phoenix. You're like, Joaquin Phoenix is a bounty hunter right now. He's a goofy, alcoholic, whoring bounty hunter.
Who killed his dad.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Very effective characterization. And we kind of talked about the jokes. I would say throughout, this movie has, it's not a comedy by any means, but it certainly has comedic elements throughout. A lot of the dialogue, I already spoke about the technology and just kind of how quaint it feels, is humorous. There's a lot of just really humorous elements in dialogue here, and I think that makes it pretty engaging throughout. It really
has. It wasn't a joke that didn't land.
Yeah, no, it never stepped too far. It never tried to make like a ridiculous Marvel joke like that just completely stops the pace of the movie. It's always either quaint or fitting with the character or fitting with the world, and all three of those are consistent. And it's humorous throughout, but it never feels like it's trying too hard, which I really respect, because there's a lot more important things happening that a joke would detract from.
It would have been funny though if
what are we, some sort of sisters brothers?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah.
what do you call it? Oh, the dialogue. It's not one of the ones that, like, you know, it never brings me back, but I really like how, I think you mentioned it a lot of this feels very like Western based off a novel, kind of True Grit. Cause like, I think the dialogue is very like True Grit light, where it's not, you know, it's not proper prose the entire time, but like, I really enjoy how John Morris does kind of speak like he's from True Grit. And then, like, will be reading his letters and be like, what the fuck is this guy on about, man? Herman Kermit made a precipitate departure? Who does he think he's kidding?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and, like, I love their comments on his letters that he leaves, where they're like, you know, he seems like a nice guy, so I'll forgive the make haste.
Yeah. Like, they're constantly making fun of him for being this proper little prissy guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great comedic elements where, I mean, on paper, this movie does not necessitate that at all, and yet it adds so much. I would not take it away at all. I think it's entirely necessary in keeping this really entertaining. the whole thing feels very cohesive. It really draws you in. This was a good matchup, like you said, Kyle, because like, these are two movies that really just suck you into this world and characters, and you never doubt any second of it. You never doubt what you're seeing. It's always exactly in line with your own kind of perception, and I think that's really effective in both of these films. So.
And like with Charlie's sister's backstory, he could have come from the City of God.
He could have.
And legitimately. I guess before we get to final thoughts, I'm just curious what you guys think of the last, not the, the after our climax, so our descending action onwards, what you guys think of that. Because that's, I like it, but I do find myself losing attention. A little bit. I think it goes on just a hair too long.
Do you mean just like when they go home and stay with her mom?
Not when they go home, but like when they're just being hunted for like weeks.
Oh, yeah, that felt a little janky. It was like all of a sudden they're building it up. They're like, yeah, we're gonna be hunted. We're gonna be hunted for years. It's probably never gonna stop until we kill the Commodore. And then jump cut to the Commodore being dead anyway. It's like
I really like that part.
It's like,
really, oh yeah, that got the biggest laugh out of me.
It's like a nice convenience that leads to a comedic moment.
Punches him.
Just want to make sure.
Just make sure.
Yeah, like that's what I meant. Like the movie ends with like the funniest part, at least to me, was when Eli punches the Commodore in the casket.
See, yeah. It's funny because when they were showing a close up of the Commodore and you just see Eli staring at him, I was also thinking like, he looks like he's asleep. He doesn't look like he's dead.
Yeah.
And so he reacted exactly like I was thinking.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, that was I don't think it's as strong as the rest of the movie, but I also don't necessarily think it's a weakness of the film. I think it's a funny and effective wrap up, but yeah, I don't know. It really didn't end as strong as the rest of it, in my opinion. Like I don't feel like it really gave you an idea of where any of the characters were going, but maybe that's not the point. So
see, I don't know. I think the opposite. I really liked the whole getting chased by the Commodore sequence and all that a lot, because once they have to amputate Charlie's arm, you see how different he becomes, because he kind of almost defines himself. I mean, he kind of mentioned in the movie, he defines himself on his ability to kill people and how good he is, and that's why he doesn't want to stop, because he's just so good at it. And once he loses his main arm, you know, you hear him say, like, are you ashamed of me? And he's just very somber and just kind of in the background fumbling with his gun and all that. And you see how he's just kind of like, this isn't the life for me anymore, and like, what is left out for me? And how they allude in the middle of the movie about how his drive is to eventually become the Commodore. And when that's stripped away from him, when he just dies of natural causes, I feel like that really adds to how, you know, he's really not just contemplating what he thinks his purpose is now. And then him eventually coming home and kind of coming back to reality and almost losing his insanity. I think all of that really added to, like, oh yeah, he's on a different path now, and kind of, he might honestly take after his older brother now and just kind of try to find a real life away from all this insanity.
Yeah, I could see that. It just felt really stark in contrast to the rest of the movie, and that's like, I totally agree with everything you said. It's just it felt a little, the pacing was different for sure, I would say.
If there was no time limit to a movie, if a movie could go on forever and it would be just as good if it was 9 hours as it would be if it were, you know, 2.5, I feel like they would have spent more time in that moment to kind of ground it and make it feel like the rest of the movie. But, you know, they had, like, I think at that point, like 30 minutes left of the movie to kind of get to the point and get to the end. And it was like, okay, how do we need to include enough to justify everything that Alex said, like, you know, to give that characterization to Charlie and show that he's kind of coming out of that world after losing his arm. But we also can't just have him just say that. You know, you have to make it seem a little bit more natural, but then you get into that, like, weird, awkward middle ground where it's like, I feel like we're moving, like, weirdly fast through this, but also, like maybe you could just fast forward, like, cut all of this out and go straight to where they, you know, say, like, we need to kill the Commodore, and then them at the Commodore's, but it's like, but then you lose all the stuff with Charlie. So it's just, like, a weird, awkward, like, point where I think the movie had to end at some point, and they were like, well, what's the least important part?
To me, it kind of feels almost like an epilogue, you know, after our we found Riz Ahmed, and that's been the goal of the movie for the first two-thirds.
That's a good word for it, epilogue.
And then it's like, yeah, well, now we have to tie up these loose ends. And so, like I said, it feels very No Country for Old Men to me, of like, you know, they kind of make it seem at first like, oh, yeah, it's going to, this is it. We gotta finish it off. This is
one
what it's
last
all
job.
Been leading to. And then they're just like, well, fuck. We did all this, and now
it's Chinatown.
what do you call it? Oh, there.
And I love how when they find out the Commodore's dead, that like the person who was most upset by that was Eli. Because he knows how much this meant to his younger brother. But Charlie was kind of like, you know, shit happens, and just walks away kind of like I feel like that really, for me, like I argued just now, that set the point of like, this is just not his life anymore. And so he was just kind of like, this is kind of like the last sign for me. Yeah, the Commodore's dead. That's not what I was supposed to do. But Eli's like, this is what my brother needed.
Yeah. Just a few more before we get to final thoughts. What did you guys get fooled at all in the surgery scene when it's just Eli going up against all of them? Because I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, oh shit, Eli Sisters is also a badass. And like, it really caught me off guard. Brendan, you are frozen in a death stare right now.
What?
you were just...
A couple things happened in my head. I was listening to you, but then I was like, with your hair and the no facial hair, you look like Andrew W.K.
I don't know who that is.
From Destroy, Build, Destroy...
The golden age of Cartoon Network.
So I was having that little moment, and that's why I was looking at you so intently.
I know what you mean, Kyle. But at the same time, I feel like all the moments where people are bodies are suddenly dropping, it's never really shown. You just kind of see people like gunshots fire off and people fall over. You never see that it's only Charlie or only Eli. So I think the underlying assumption throughout is that it's mostly Charlie because he's been shown as being the killer and everything. And then all of a sudden, Eli just mops a town like it's no big deal. And that is a little surprising, but I also don't doubt it because...
Oh, I love it as a point of...
Yeah.
It really... And I think it shows interesting. It kind of reminds me of the Mythic Forest part of Smiling Friends when it's just Eli shooting and he's like, Charlie, go tend to the horses, and he's there shooting and Charlie's like, man, I don't want to go, or Eli's Charlie's like, I don't want to go tend to the horses, I want to fight.
Yeah.
Well, no, also I mean I feel like the opening of the movie kind of sets that up a little bit, because you see them both storm that house. And it's unclear who's who until I think Eli's the one in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then Charlie shoots the guy on the outside. But it's like Eli was the one in the house. Like, you just watched him dust an entire house full of people. Yeah. I guess Charlie was just outside waiting for anyone to be running out. Also, I mean, even the way that Eli reacts in that opening where he's like, I'm not walking home, Charlie. He runs into the burning barn.
Yeah. I would say it is a subversion of expectation, just in the fact that he ends. I don't know. It's in that scene especially, you just see him go off that, and you feel like he's moving away from that role. But you can clearly see that if pushed to do it, he will do it.
And it's also because when he's in the surgery house, he's like sitting there and he's like freaking out. He's like, oh shit, God, oh no, and then he handles
and
it like
dry heaving.
Yeah, he's like getting physically upset, and you're like, oh, he's gonna get his ass handed to him, and then he like absolutely masterfully, all right, throw your guns out, throws out a belt, has two guns in his suspenders, and then we just see it, he kills the entire town. I really like, there's little parts like that I like a lot in that final epilogue part, but overall, it drags a hair for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think, an interesting thing about the movie is that a part of the movie that has so much action in it can almost drag because that's not what the movie is.
No, that is interesting. Because, that's easily the most action in the movie. But
that's all of the action in the movie happens then. it's wild that because of the movie that preceded it, you're like, well, this is where's my brotherly conversations and interesting hopes for a utopian in Texas or utopia in Texas. Yeah. Like, where's all that? That's the movie.
that's what I wanted.
Oh, that's another great joke where Charlie goes, "This is the furthest we've gone together." And he goes, "You mean in conversation?" And he goes, "The fuck do you mean? I mean in a straight line. This is the furthest we've gone together in a straight line."
Yeah.
Good humor.
I could just keep talking about this, gang. There's so much. But
yeah, it's a great movie.
We're at an hour, so we ought to wrap up.
That sounds reasonable. Yeah, no, yeah. It's a wonderful movie. It's really, I probably like this more than even like The Hateful Eight, which is probably another like equivalent Western of the last 10 years. And yeah, this is one that sticks out even more. I think it's this is a great film.
Oh yeah, I would agree with that completely because I hated The Hateful Eight.
I also hate The Hateful Eight.
I said this title is fitting. I hate all eight of them.
I like The Hateful Eight. I think I like this more, but I digress. Anyway, yeah, I mean, final thoughts then? Are we in that territory? All right.
Yeah.
Any particular order?
I'll go. Since I started. Final thoughts on this as someone who loves these like small it feels even weird to call this movie small because it feels like it had the biggest budget on Earth. Like it.
Okay, but that's a really sad note.
Not shot on film, which is
Like
also, I looked it up because it's so sad. This movie ran on a $38 million budget and then made 13.1 in the box office. So this movie tanked.
Yeah. It was one of the
It was a big festival movie though.
It was. It was one of the last Annapurna put out before they got shut down, which easily was my tied with A24 for my favorite studio out there right now. But this is the story of all their movies is exactly that. Critically acclaimed, didn't make any money.
Yeah.
Doesn't Annapurna make games now?
Yeah. Yep. Annapurna Interactive. I think they published Oxenfree, which is a great game. What was I going to say? Yeah. I love these like smaller kind of Western stories. A couple other ones that I enjoyed were like Slow West. I think I put.
Is that the Michael Fassbender one?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
It's pretty good. I think I put, Hell or High Water on this list.
Yeah, it's your four seed.
Yeah, that's another great one. Bone Tomahawk is pretty gross, but it's enjoyable at times.
Logan.
Logan. That's a weird one I forget about. But
no
Logan,
one's fighting you on this one, Alex. Stop coming in with that shit-eating grin.
Either way, super enjoyable. Loved pretty much every moment of it except for like a couple parts in the lead up to like the main story. I really hope I get to watch this more than once.
Alex, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I'll go next. I think I'd say I love this movie. It's super, super well done, and just everything about it is so engaging and immersive, and their dedication to like practicality and really fleshing out this world just did wonders for it. You described the story as pretty simple, Ryan. I mean, I guess it is at its core very simple, but I thought it was never predictable, and I thought everything it did was super just engaging. Like I loved every twist and turn and how no character really acted in a very predictable way, and just the whole journey this movie took, I loved it. It's a movie that I did not give a fair shot the first time, unfortunately, Kyle, and I'm sorry about that, but I hope this redeems me in your eyes, because it really is a fantastic movie.
I couldn't agree more. This is one that I think is excellent, very often overlooked, and I really enjoy every moment of it. The pacing is really the only thing I would say. Like it just feels like in some moments it's not as strong clearly as others. Like and that's very few moments, few and far between throughout the film, but like there are those moments that aren't as strong as the majority of it, but that really doesn't detract from the overall experience. I think this movie is just, it clearly has a lot of love put into it, and it clearly has a lot of thought put into the production design and music and characterization and story as a whole. And this was based on a book, so I have to think that that kind of love was put into the book as well, and it really pays off in the film, because I think this is really well done, and I think it's one of the best Westerns of this century. So absolutely would recommend it to pretty much anybody. I mean, I know that the Western is one that doesn't connect to modern audiences quite as much as it did back in the day, but I think the people who really enjoy just film in general would really connect to this. There's just so much greatness behind this, and it's an excellent complete package. And
I think this movie's super accessible.
It's not a very
film lovers movie. I think anyone who enjoys movies could watch this and get a lot out of it.
I don't know how anybody could say this is bad. I don't know how.
I would only argue that like the best Western that I always think of is the one on I-75. I don't think about any of the other ones.
As soon as you said the best Western, in my head I was like, is he giving a joke?
Everybody, also, Brendan just locationed himself. We know he's somewhere off I-75. That narrows, that easily takes out 75% of this country. So be on the lookout, Kino Clashers, for best Westerns off the side of I-75.
Yep, Brendan records on the side of the highway. Brendan's on the side of the highway recording Kino Clash.
No, I'm living out of a best Western.
Find him now. Kyle, take us home, and then we'll get into voting.
Oh. Well, fellas, I'm absolutely delighted. I'm really happy everyone liked this one so much. It is, again, like I was reflecting last night when I finished it, and I was like, yeah, I'm very comfortable with this at my number four. From a standpoint on its own, again, I think it's just such a beautiful movie. Like, it's one of those where I could probably just mute it and watch and be like, yeah, this is pretty.
Yeah, you want to see the melting skin without audio?
I love just watching boiling blisters on Riz Ahmed. It really gets me off.
That's why you liked Venom so much.
That's why I love Venom. Speaking of which, I love Riz Ahmed's performance in this. I love him as an actor, and I think this is probably my favorite of his. Just such a likable guy. There's so much to talk about here. It does so much well, but I think you guys have said it best. It's clearly a passion piece to somebody, and everybody is just doing their job on it, and it's fantastic. Yeah,
I really think it is a passion piece, because I've never heard of this director. He's a French director, but just quickly skimming, none of his other movies are anything like this.
No.
And they're all pretty French-centric, so yeah, this
apparently there are people who are really big fans of this guy. I might be interested in watching some of his other movies. But yeah, I read this yesterday after, and I agree with it. I think the European perspective to the Western really lends to this, because there's a lot that, like, you know, I would imagine an American would probably gloss over, because we're so ingrained in it. But then it's like, no, I'm paying attention to all these little details. I think it really lends to making that world.
But Kyle, what would a European know about the West?
I saw a little gleam.
What would a
in your
New
eyes?
Zealand woman know about the West?
She. All those cowboys are just shirtless and gay, and it's like, what's going on, huh? What's that got to do with the West?
You're talking about the Sam Elliott response to Power of the Dog. Yeah, it was a little gay, but
it's like something out of a Playgirl magazine.
Oh, that was so funny. I can't think of something like sillier to say than what does a European have to say about the Wild West? Like, that is the funniest statement in light of like the most famous Western movies ever made being made by
in, in light that they're made in Italy most of the like come on. Oh my God, it's such a ridiculous take, but that was it did give
that's
me
why
a
we
chuckle.
Love them.
Yeah.
All right, gang.
Hey, guys. Guys, are we all going to watch The Ranch season 3, though? Just to catch him in a...
Sure.
Is The Ranch still going on?
No, after
Danny
Masterson.
Yeah, they canceled it. I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be weird if that show was still on. Okay.
I mean, I'm going to be watching Ghost Rider, but that's neither here nor there. All right. Anywho,
Let's final, get to it.
Yeah, just go to voting. All right. I had City of God, so I guess I can kick us into voting. After this conversation and just like watching these movies in general, it really feels like a disservice to vote against any of these movies because I think they're both so great at what they do and the things they're trying to accomplish. To keep it short, I'm gonna stick with City of God because I can't not give it a chance. I think it's so excellent at showing you that world and really keeping you there and really getting under your skin as far as the things that it's showing you in the scenes that are happening. And that's not to take away from City of God, the Sisters Brothers. It's not to take away from the Sisters Brothers. It both of these movies really just suck you into this world that they're showing. And I think they're both so effective. It's just that something about City of God has a real spark to it, and I think the whole movie is really electric, and I think its pacing is a little bit better than the Sisters Brothers, and that's what it comes down to mostly, because I think both of these movies are excellent, but City of God, yeah, it just really electrocutes me, and it really keeps me in my seat, and I'm never questioning the world. I'm always entertained. There's humor in that one as well. There's great music. And I think the camera work and editing, I think it's more entertaining than the Sisters Brothers. And that's not to detract from the Sisters Brothers at all. So, yeah, my vote is City of God, but this is an excellent matchup because these are both titans, I would say. These both have a really good chance to go the long run in this bracket here. So, yeah.
So, I pretty much agree with everything you said there. And for the same reason you said, I'm voting for Sisters Brothers just because I have to give it a chance.
Yeah.
But I could easily do a tip of my hat vote to City of God here. I said this was a tough one for me. I liked City of God more on the second watching more than I liked it on the first, and I really liked it on the first. I said it last time. I think it's perfect for the most part. I'm definitely using results-based reasoning here for why I'd vote for Sisters Brothers. For me, I like the story in Sisters Brothers a lot more, and I like the characters more. That's not a knock on City of God. That's just, if I'm tossing a coin 6 times out of 10, I'm going to take this. This truly has been a titan matchup. So, with that being said, vote's going to go to the Sisters Brothers. And before we get into this next one, I'll just put it out there again. I cannot tie, so we will learn very quickly.
I, just like with you guys, it's a matter of splitting hairs, honestly. I didn't expect this matchup to be so close. I had already seen Sisters Brothers and started recalling that I didn't have the best view on it, and I never seen City of God. So I thought it was going to be very much, oh, City of God's going to be the pick. But no, they're both amazing movies. And I love them for very different reasons. The Sisters Brothers is one I can rewatch infinitely versus the City of God. I probably need 20 years in between each rewatch so that my dementia has time to forget about it.
Coward.
But no, City of God is a marvel of filmmaking. It truly is just like amazing the sort of actors they were able to get for that movie and how seamlessly they existed in that world. They were not actors. This was not a movie. This was just, like we said before, it was just cameras were mounted to the city of God, and we were just observing events. So in that respect, and just like the production of the entire movie, it was outstanding. And this movie felt more like a movie in a weird way. Like, it was more like I'm seeing a story that could be fictional, and I went to the theater to watch this. And in that respect, I think it was amazing at what it did. I love the characters. I love the story. I love the arcs of all the characters. I love what they did with Charlie at the end. And I really believed his turn away from insanity. And the world is just so well built and so well fleshed out that it's such an immersive movie. So it really is tough to vote. And honestly, if I could tie, I would just say these two movies are a tie. But if I have to pick, I will say the only gripe I have with City of God is how rough it is, but that's kind of what it's going for. Versus the only gripe I have with Sisters Brothers is, as small and stupid as it is John Morris's, you know, I would have believed that character wouldn't have killed himself before he killed Charlie. And unfortunately for that reason, my vote goes to City of God.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Kyle. I thought you were hooking me the other way. Oh, that one hurt a little.
I'm sorry. I could see you were getting excited, so I was trying to like
peel
the band-aid off quickly.
Well, then I'll go. I really enjoyed both movies for different reasons. Alex, when you said you would watch the Sisters Brothers in a theater, I went, I can't even imagine the horror of watching City of God in a movie theater. The floods of people leaving the theater. Like seeing it in IMAX and just wanting to tear your eyes out like Oedipus after, like, just but yeah, I'm a sucker for like films with clearer narratives. Like, I mean, Sisters Brothers just speaks to me in a way that movies speak to me, and as interesting and beautiful and incredible as City of God was, I don't ever want to watch that movie again. Sounds like I'm gonna, but
oh no, you're gonna. It's done.
I got much less out of it outside of just like the wow factor of that movie of like, wow, this is incredible.
Go on, Ryan, call him a coward.
I got a lot more out of like, as far as like narrative and stuff like that, and connection to me specifically, I got way more out of the Sisters Brothers. So my vote is for the Sisters Brothers. It's sort of a senseless ballot, but just so Kyle knows.
I appreciate it. I do.
This is actually very sad. This is not the way I wanted the Sisters Brothers to go out. Actually,
I said it as soon as we rolled it last time. This was the shittiest matchup I got dealt, and I am pissed about it still.
Sad one.
Yeah, because if Sisters Brothers was up against very much else, I mean, it would have went up. It would have gone forward. So,
and I was so on the fence, Kyle. I'm so sorry. Like,
hey, I honestly
could have gone anyway.
Now, that makes Kyle happy. He likes on the fence. If you came out saying, thought John C. Reilly looked like they just rolled him out of Adult Swim to be a cowboy, he probably would have been more upset.
I would have.
See, that's the thing. These are both excellent movies. Like I said, I feel like it's a disservice to vote between these two, but that's just the nature of the game, unfortunately. And yeah,
the game that Kyle made.
Kyle, game that Kyle I made and am himself. Now losing violently.
So,
I guess we should clarify. Yes, it was a tie, but I think we can all agree. Here, I'll get the specific numbers.
See, I have them pulled
up. Settle the tie.
Yeah, I have them ready.
I've got
them. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I knew this from the get-go.
Yeah.
City of God has a 4.4, which is one of the highest Letterboxd reviews you can get. Sisters Brothers has a 3.5, so
which it feels a little criminal to me. I think
this feels low.
I have it as a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and I think that's the bare minimum. Like that's with me being critical of things that are just very personal to me. So I would think most people would rate this higher, but yeah, 3.5 seems a little low, but
no happy ending. Three stars.
I guess so. I don't know.
This Letterboxd review for City of God, all it says is 79 out of 100, one of a kind. Like, those two not go together.
Interesting.
All right, let's roll them bones, Kyle.
Yeah.
I want to know what we're...
I count the bones. I think I'm 1 in 5 or 1 in 6. I think I'm 1 in 6 now, everybody, actually. So.
You are. But good thing you won with the Green Mile.
It is. I haven't won since August of 2021.
You're just so tired, huh, boss?
I tell you what, I've been on, I think, 3 in a row now. What, it was Sisters Brothers, Aviator, Hudsucker.
Get your shit kicked in.
I'm ready to step off home plate. I'll take a breather real quick.
Hey, this one, your shit was not kicked in, though. This one, you were bandaged up and sent on your way.
It got progressively better. I'm glad it started with Hudsucker, and then we got to Aviator, which was kind of a mixed bag, and then this was a unanimous like.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, Kyle, you got that Kino Clash bracket ready and handy?
Let's get her going.
All right. In a roll of 1 to 18, we got 1. So this is a 1 seed. This is the big one.
I'm on deck again, buddy. And this is one I've been looking forward to. This is going to be brutal. This is Her versus Fury.
Which one's first?
Fury.
Joaquin's back at it again.
Yeah. Fury's my... Listen, Fury's my 16 seed, everybody. Oh, fuck!
Yeah, Her is my first, is my number one.
Oh, man, this is the worst.
He's so upset.
It had to happen. Like, I've wanted to watch both these movies, so I'm excited for the matchup. And I'll say, I don't know anything
about... Maybe
Shia's
going to save it.
I think Fury has not a fighting chance, but like a could stumble into a win, maybe, if you guys are drunk.
Drunk?
Well, I think it could. I mean, Her is a very specific movie, and I feel like it might bounce. Has everyone seen Her here?
No.
I have not.
I have, and I adore it.
Yeah, so. but like, then Ryan, you know exactly what I'm talking about, where that movie could bounce someone off pretty hard.
I don't know, man. That feels... everyone I've shown that movie to...
It's a great movie. I'm not trying to... it's my number one choice, but I'm just saying that it might bounce a certain Carl off.
I think there's a... I'm excited for it, but I do think there's a high chance that could happen.
I mean, I could see
Kyle Redacted.
Damn it.
But
it's
yeah,
just so easy.
I have not seen Fury. So
yeah, have any of you seen Fury?
I've seen Fury.
So I'm the only one who hasn't.
I didn't realize y'all had seen it.
Yeah.
But it was... I saw it like the year after it came out, so I don't remember it well.
I just think everybody knows Shy is in it.
Kyle, I had a poster of him in my room for so long. I saw all of his movies.
Yeah, you had that Holes poster in your room.
Ryan, it was a poster of Shia LaBeouf in the bathtub.
He's not kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to... What? How do you mean?
Did Best Western let you hang that up?
Yeah.
Yeah, they provided it for me. No, it looked like it was shot in a Best Western, honestly. It was a photo of Shia LaBeouf circa, like, Even Steven. Like, no, circa, like, Transformers 1. Okay. In, like, a suit laying in a bathtub.
Oh.
And he had just the biggest shit-eating grin, and it was his name, like, signed at the top, Shia LaBeouf.
Okay. All right. Oh, you said he was clothed. That makes it a little more normal. Or maybe less normal. Who am I to say? I don't know.
Hey, do you know what we should do for the for? We'll make that the thumbnail for the Fury episode.
Oh, I'm honestly so on board with that.
All right.
All right, take us out.
Cool. Yeah. So, by the skin of my teeth, I've escaped with yet another victory. in City of God, join us next time for the first one seed matchup. This is the first big, the first really big matchup. I believe before this, seed two with Tron Legacy, Good Time. Mm-hmm. That was the other highest matchup. So this is a big one. So join us next time on Kino Clash. Hope you enjoyed this one. Hope you enjoy the next one. Bye-bye. So long, everybody. Have a good night.